host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now! The U.S. Attorney for New York and five Justice Department officials have resigned, refusing to dismiss the Justice Department's corruption charges against New York City Mayor Eric Adams. Then to the Munich Security Conference in Germany.
We'll be dealing with President Putin largely on the phone, and we ultimately expect to meet. In fact, we expect that he'll come here and I'll go there.
Nothing should be decided about Ukraine without the Ukrainians, and nothing about Europe without the Europeans. That is a given.
Vice President J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio are expected to meet with Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky in Munich. We'll go there for the latest on the conference and the protests against it. We'll speak with former Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis. And today is Valentine's Day. We'll speak with a reporter and OKCupid security whistleblower behind a major new investigation, Rape Under Wraps, How Tinder, Hinge, and their corporate owner, Match.com, chose profits over safety. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A federal judge ordered the Trump administration to restore U.S. funding for foreign aid. Judge Amir Ali, a Biden appointee, said Trump's executive order set off a shockwave for aid groups that relied on the money, which had already been appropriated by Congress. Lawyers argued the blanket freeze harmed both recipients of the aid and U.S. businesses and organizations that provide it, arguing before the court, quote, businesses are shuttering, terminating employees, food is rotting, medication expiring. A group of 14 states have sued Donald Trump and Elon Musk, accusing the president of giving the world's richest man seemingly limitless and unchecked power to dismantle federal agencies, saying it's, quote, antithetical to the nation's entire constitutional structure, unquote. Earlier this week, President Trump signed an executive order to expand the power of Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. The lawsuit comes as the Trump administration fired thousands of workers, including at the Departments of Education, Energy, and Veterans Affairs, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the Office of Personnel Management, the Environmental Protection Agency, the General Services Administration, and the Small Business Administration. On Thursday, Musk said the Trump administration should, quote, delete entire agencies, unquote, from the federal government. Fired federal workers at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau took part in a protest Wednesday outside the agency's headquarters in Washington, D.C., which have been closed all week.
The CFPB gets money back from consumers who've been screwed by banks and other financial institutions. Call your congressional representatives and say that you care about the CFPB continuing to exist.
The Trump administration's continuing to attack judges who rule against President Trump's executive actions. On Thursday, Elon Musk expressed support for impeaching the judge who blocked the president's funding freeze. Meanwhile, the American Bar Association's warned the rule of law and the nation's constitutional system are under attack. The U.S. Senate confirmed Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as health secretary Thursday, handing him control of 13 federal agencies, including the CDC, FDA, and National Institutes of Health, and oversight over Medicare and Medicaid. Democrats repeatedly warned against RFK Jr.'s confirmation, citing his espousal of vaccine conspiracy theories, including one linking vaccines to autism. The only Republican to vote against Kennedy was Senator Mitch McConnell, a survivor of polio. He said, quote, I will not condone the relitigation of proven cures, unquote. Trump later attacked McConnell and cast doubt on whether he ever had polio. RFK Jr. will control nearly $2 trillion in health spending. After his confirmation, RFK Jr. said he expects major staffing cuts at federal health agencies. On the same day as Kennedy's confirmation and swearing in, Louisiana's top health official announced Louisiana will no longer promote that mass vaccination. Also Thursday, Democratic senators grilled Linda McMahon, Trump's pick to lead the Education Department, which Trump has repeatedly threatened to shut down. McMahon, the former CEO of World Wrestling Entertainment, was questioned by Connecticut Democrat Chris Murphy on Trump's order banning diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI.
My son is in a public school. He takes a class called African American History. If you're running an African American history class, could you perhaps be in violation of this court order, of this executive order?
I'm not quite certain, and I'd like to look into it further and get back to you on that.
McMahon's hearing was interrupted by multiple protesters, including one who warned that the People with Disabilities Education Act, that's the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, is under threat. In other cabinet news, the Senate has confirmed Brooke Rollins as Agriculture Secretary, and the Senate Judiciary Committee has advanced Kash Patel's confirmation to head the FBI. Lee Zeldin, the new head of the Environmental Protection Agency, is attempting to rescind $20 billion in grants for climate and clean energy projects that have been awarded by the Biden administration. The money was set to go to the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, known as the Green Bank, and fund projects benefiting disadvantaged communities. Zeldin also canceled a $50 million grant to the Climate Justice Alliance. The Biden administration had allocated the funding to the group, but later withheld it after CJA accused Israel of committing genocide in Gaza, allowing Trump's EPA to permanently cancel the grant. The top federal prosecutor in New York, the interim U.S. attorney, and five other high-ranking Justice Department officials have resigned to protest the Trump administration's order to dismiss corruption charges against New York City Mayor Eric Adams. In a letter, the acting interim U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, Danielle Sassoon, said dropping the case against Adams would be, quote, inconsistent with my ability and duty to prosecute federal crimes without fear or favor and to advance good faith arguments before the courts, unquote. In her letter, Sassoon, who'd been appointed by Trump, went on to accuse Adams of promising to help Trump's immigration crackdown in exchange for the charges being dropped. After Sassoon refused to drop the charges, Justice Department officials moved the case to another division, leading to more resignations. Earlier Thursday, Adams met with Trump's so-called border czar, Tom Homan, to discuss plans to reopen an ICE office inside New York's Riker Island jail complex. Protesters rallied in the streets in response. This is a Nicaraguan asylum seeker.
I'm a Nicaraguan citizen. I came to this country looking for opportunity, the opportunity that was taken away from me in my country, the opportunity for freedom of speech and to work here and to be a contributing citizen. The U.S. has taken away the liberty that Nicaragua has also taken away.
The Trump-appointed U.S. attorney who resigned, Danielle Sassoon, was a Federalist Society member and a law clerk for Justice Antonin Scalia. In related news, the Trump administration has taken back $80 million that FEMA had given New York City to cover the hotel costs for asylum seekers. New York's controller, Brad Lander, accused Elon Musk of highway robbery. Earlier this week, Musk lashed out at the use of federal dollars to provide temporary shelter to asylum seekers, falsely claiming immigrants were staying in luxury hotels. Meanwhile, in Colorado, Denver's public school district has become the first in the nation to sue Trump over its policy allowing Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to conduct raids at schools, which caused attendance to plummet. Ukraine has accused Russia of a drone attack on the Chernobyl nuclear plant. The attack sparked a fire, but Ukraine says radiation levels remain normal. This comes as Vice President J.D. Vance is meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the Munich Security Conference today. Vance told the Wall Street Journal the U.S. could slap Moscow with sanctions and even use, quote, military tools of leverage, unquote, if Vladimir Putin does not agree to a deal guaranteeing Ukraine's long-term independence. On Thursday, Trump said Ukraine would, of course, have a role in negotiations after evading a reporter question earlier this week on whether he saw Kyiv as an equal member of possible peace talks. In more foreign policy news, Trump has proposed talks with China and Russia aimed at the nuclear stockpiles and slashing all three of the country's military budgets in half, including the U.S. President Trump announced Thursday he's moving to impose reciprocal tariffs on trading partners across the globe, including longtime U.S. allies. He made the announcement ahead of a visit from Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi at the White House. During a joint news conference with Modi Thursday, Trump said the U.S. is increasing military sales to India, including the eventual sale of F-35 fighter jets. In Sudan, witnesses say the Rapid Support Forces stormed the country's largest camp for displaced people, looting and setting fires to homes in a market. The Zamzam camp in North Darfur has been repeatedly attacked since late last year. The RSF denied the reports about 500,000 displaced people who are suffering from famine live in the camp. The latest attack forced thousands of them to flee again. Doctors Without Borders said at least 7 people were killed. In the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, armed groups are subjecting children to sexual violence, including rape. That's according to UNICEF, which has warned the targeting of children by armed groups has soared to unprecedented levels. UNICEF says it's received at least 170 reports of rape involving children. One mother told UNICEF her 6 daughters, the youngest 12 years old, were raped by armed men while searching for food. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum says she's considering legal action against Google if Google refuses to reverse its renaming of the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of America on Google Maps.
The only place where the United States can call it something different is where it exercises sovereignty, and that's 22 nautical miles from the coast in its territory. So Google is wrong.
Protesters in Bolivia disrupted a government conference Thursday that was discussing lithium contracts with Chinese and Russian businesses. Bolivians say the country's lithium, the largest reserves in the world, should benefit the people of Bolivia and that deals were made without legally required consultation with indigenous communities. Lithium exploitation leads to soil degradation, water shortages, and disrupts local ecosystems. Last year was the deadliest for journalists. That's according to the Committee to Protect Journalists, which reports at least 124 journalists and media workers were killed in 2024. Nearly two-thirds of them Palestinian journalists killed by Israel. The CPJ also cites the high number of journalist deaths due to conflicts in Sudan, Pakistan, and Burma, also known as Myanmar. A federal judge temporarily blocked Trump's executive order attempting to shut down nationwide access to gender-affirming care for transgender minors. The judge's order prohibits federal agencies from conditioning or withholding funding to health care providers and institutions that provide the care. Kansas's Democratic Governor Laura Kelly vetoed a proposal to ban gender-affirming care for transgender youth for the third straight year. Thus far, Kansas Republicans have failed to overrule Kelly's veto. Meanwhile, in New Hampshire, 2 trans high school athletes are legally challenging Trump's order banning trans girls and women from competing in school sports. The city of Worcester, Massachusetts, passed a resolution designating itself a sanctuary city for the transgender community. Here in New York, protesters are gathering at the historic Stonewall Inn today at noon after the National Park Service attempted to erase trans and queer people from its history by removing the letters T and Q from references to LGBTQ+ people from the Stonewall National Monument website. The Stonewall Rebellion was led in part by Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, both transgender activists of color. A Texas judge ordered New York doctor Margaret Carpenter to stop prescribing and sending abortion pills to Texas patients and fined her $100,000. The case is expected to make its way to the Supreme Court in what would be a major test to shield laws that protect abortion providers nationwide. Meanwhile, New York Governor Kathy Hochul rejected an extradition request from Louisiana's attorney general for the same doctor, citing New York shield laws. Dr. Carpenter was indicted in Louisiana for prescribing abortion pills to a patient there online. And Senator Bernie Sanders is launching a national tour to fight oligarchy, starting with stops in Omaha, Nebraska, and Iowa City next week to speak with working-class Americans who voted for Trump.
The oligarch's nightmare is that we will not allow ourselves to be divided up by race, religion, sexual orientation, or country of origin, and will together have the courage to take them on.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show here in New York, where the top federal prosecutor and five other high-ranking Justice Department officials have resigned, refusing to implement the Trump administration's order to dismiss corruption charges against New York City Mayor Eric Adams. In a stunning letter, the acting interim U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Danielle Sassoon, said dropping the case against Mayor Adams would be, quote, inconsistent with my ability and duty to prosecute federal crimes without fear or favor and to advance good faith arguments before the courts, unquote. Sassoon was appointed by Trump, is a longtime member of the Federalist Society, and she clerked for Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Sassoon's letter was addressed to Acting Deputy Attorney General Emil Bovee, who was one of President Trump's defense attorneys in his New York State criminal trial last year. Bovee sent the memo Monday ordering the charges to be dismissed because they, quote, unduly restricted Mayor Adams' ability to devote full attention and resources, unquote, to help with Trump's immigration crackdown. In her letter, Sassoon said Adams and his lawyers, quote, repeatedly urged what amounted to a quid pro quo. After Sassoon refused to drop the charges, Justice Department officials moved the case from New York to the Public Integrity Section in the Criminal Division of the Justice Department that led to more prosecutors resigning. This all came after Adams met Thursday with Trump's so-called border czar, Tom Homan, to discuss the possible reopening of an ICE office inside New York's Rikers Island jail. Protesters rallied in Manhattan to condemn ICE. This is a Nicaraguan asylum seeker.
I'm a Nicaraguan citizen. I came to this country looking for opportunity, the opportunity that was taken away from me in my country, the opportunity for freedom of speech and to work here and to be a contributing citizen. The U.S. has taken away the liberty that Nicaragua has also taken away. All I ask for is freedom.
For more, we're joined by Ron Kuby, criminal defense and civil rights lawyer based here in New York. Well, this is amazing. It seems to be almost an echo of the Saturday Night Massacre when Nixon tried to get his way with the Justice Department. We'll talk about that in a minute. But explain the significance of the interim U.S. attorney in New York, the Southern District, often called the Sovereign District, and the significance of that. Her resigning followed by five other top attorneys.
Well, at the outset, it's an illustration that you don't have to comply under these circumstances. Rather than become a Trump toady, which is one option, you can quit your job. And obviously, Danielle Sassoon has many other opportunities awaiting her. She was clearly a rising star on the right until she ran afoul of the Trump administration on this issue. And so it's a good illustration for people who are considering their career over the next 4 years, for them to say, federal prosecutors to say, you know what, I'm just not going to go along with this. I am going to resign. I'm not going to carry out these duties. And it illustrates sort of a hollowing out of the more competent attorneys in the Justice Department, which just makes it that much harder for the Trump administration to sort of carry out its agenda against activists, against public officials, and against other people who cross it.
I mean, this is amazing. In her letter to Attorney General Pamela Bondi a day before, Sassoon argued the law doesn't support a dismissal, adding she's confident that Adams has committed the crimes with which he's charged. She also accused Adams' lawyers of, quote, repeatedly urged what amounted to a quid pro quo, indicating Adams would be in a position to assist with the department's enforcement priorities only if the indictment was dismissed. Explain what it means to be dismissed without prejudice, that every day, if Adams doesn't do what Trump wants, for example, around immigration, the case could be brought back against him.
That's right. This is the sort of club hanging over the head of Mayor Adams throughout the rest of his tenure as mayor. And even if he does do what they want, they could still bring back the charges. This is not an administration that's known for its consistency or loyalty. But clearly he knows that he has to get on board. Otherwise, he may be on a train to some federal prison. And that's explicit in the directions given by the Justice Department. And you can see Adams racing to comply. I mean, the quo was being supplied really fast after the quid here.
I mean, that's really important. Yesterday, you have Sassoon saying this is a quid pro quo. And she said the top Justice Department official under Bondi, right? And let's remember, Emil Bovey was the personal attorney for Trump, as well as the man who looks like he's about to be confirmed, who will be right above him, Todd Blanche, in a meeting, who took away the notes of the lawyers who took notes. She said it was extremely clear that he wanted Adams to engage in the quid pro quo. So yesterday, you have a meeting with Homan saying he's instituting an ICE office in Rikers Island.
So the Justice Department historically has always carried out the policies of the President of the United States. You go all the way back to the 50s during the Red Scare. The Southern District executed the Rosenbergs. You can go through COINTELPRO in the 60s. In the 80s, the sanctuary prosecutions initiated by Reagan, Bush's invasion of Panama to arrest Manuel Noriega. You know, some administrations do more, some administrations do less, but it's always political. So, you know, to that extent, this is not unusual. But what makes this different is it's explicit. At least in the past, the Justice Department went to pains to say this is not a political decision. We are making these decisions solely on the basis of the law. We don't initiate or decline prosecutions based on the political policies of the people who are being targeted, et cetera, et cetera. There's no fig leaf anymore.
So let's go back to what was known as the Saturday Night Massacre. During a single evening on Saturday, October 20th, what was this, 1973, Nixon ordered Attorney General Elliot Richardson to fire Archibald Cox, who was the special prosecutor investigating Watergate. Richardson refused and resigned. So Nixon then ordered Deputy Attorney General William Ruckelshaus to fire Cox. He refused. And then he ordered the Solicitor General Robert Bork to fire Cox. He agreed.
And Robert Bork never lived down that particular bit of ignominy. That's the reason he never became a Supreme Court justice, because of his role in that. And here, eventually, sooner or later, as you go through the Southern District, you will find some lawyer willing to file a motion with the court to dismiss these charges.
So they might file. I mean, it could be Emil Bovey himself or some guy from or a woman from somewhere else in the country who comes in to argue. But couldn't the judge refuse?
In theory, the judge can refuse to dismiss the charges, because that's always up to judicial discretion. But if the judge refuses, then what? The Justice Department says, we are not prosecuting, we are not going forward, so, okay, dismiss, don't dismiss, but nothing is happening with this case, and eventually the defense would move to dismiss on speedy trial grounds, and that would have to be granted. So this is effectively going to be the end of the case once the administration finds somebody sufficiently spineless to actually file the papers.
So New York City doesn't have a recall, but New York Governor Kathy Hochul has the power to remove New York City Mayor Eric Adams. She spoke on MSNBC on Rachel Maddow's show last night.
This is not supposed to happen in our system of justice. The Bondi administration in that Department of Justice is already showing they're corrupt. Now, set that aside. I did see the letter that was issued by the acting United States Attorney. The allegations are extremely concerning and serious.
Yes.
But I cannot, as the governor of this state, have a knee-jerk, politically motivated reaction like a lot of other people are saying right now. I have to do what's smart, what's right, and I'm consulting with other leaders in government at this time.
So, Ron Kuby, your response to the governor, what does that mean?
Yeah, it means I'm not removing him now. I may remove him in the future. I may not. I have to have a lot of discussions and conferences. You don't want me just going off and doing something like that just because of all of this, the kind of unraveling of the rule of law. I need to take some time and think. It doesn't mean anything. It's sort of typical Governor Hochul when she's confronted with an unpleasant reality.
Well, we will see what happens and, of course, follow it in the coming days. Ron Kuby, criminal defense and civil rights lawyer based here in New York. Next up to Germany, where protests are planned against the Munich Security Conference. Vice President Vance is there. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is there. We'll speak with the former Greek finance minister who will be leading one of the protests. Stay with us.
Mom's in the kitchen, daddy's on the phone, and nobody knows what's going on. But I've got them so long I see you, 'cause my Buick's outside with blue. Well, one for the money, honey, two for the show, and it's three to get ready. Tom's gotta go, he's got them so long I see you, 'cause my Buick's outside with blue.
So Long, I'll See Ya by Tom Waits. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to Munich, Germany, where a high-level security conference with dozens of world leaders is underway. At the top of the agenda, Russia-Ukraine war. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is expected to meet with Vice President J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio today. Earlier this week, President Trump said he would hold bilateral talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin to end the nearly three-year-long war. The announcement stoked fears in Europe that Ukraine would be sidelined in the talks. This is the German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, speaking last night at a news conference in Berlin.
Nothing should be decided about Ukraine without the Ukrainians, and nothing about Europe without the Europeans. That is a given. We agree on this with all our friends and partners in Europe.
Eines ist für mich völlig klar.
One thing is absolutely clear to me. Any negotiated solution must enable Ukraine to have armed forces at its disposal in the future that can repel any renewed Russian attack. This is a considerable challenge financially, materially, and logistically. This would exceed Ukraine's financial capabilities for the foreseeable future. We Europeans and our transatlantic and international partners are needed here.
On Thursday, President Trump walked back to his initial comments and told reporters Ukraine would, of course, be a party to talks with Russia. Vice President J.D. Vance told The Wall Street Journal that the U.S. could slap Moscow with sanctions and even use, quote, military tools of leverage if Vladimir Putin does not agree to a deal guaranteeing Ukraine's long-term independence. Vance told The Wall Street Journal he plans to tell European leaders to embrace populist parties, stop mass migration, and curb progressive policies. Vance will not be meeting with the German chancellor, who's the host of the conference. Meanwhile, over 40 protest rallies are planned against the security conference in Munich this weekend. For more, we're joined in Munich by two guests. Melanie Schweitzer is a lawyer who works at the German Ministry of Labor and Social Affairs, a member of the progressive party Mira 25, running for a parliamentary seat in the elections later this month. And we're joined by Yanis Varoufakis, former finance minister of Greece. His most recent book, Techno-Feudalism, What Killed Capitalism. He's scheduled to speak at one of the protest rallies in Munich Saturday. Their slogan, peace capable instead of war capable. Yanis Varoufakis, we'll start with you. What exactly does that mean? And what is your overall message in Munich right now, where you have the new vice president of the United States and new secretary of state? Of course, they're not the only members. The message, the top story now is the Russia-Ukraine war.
Well, Amy, Europe used to be a wonderful peace project. The whole point of bringing together different nations into the European Union was supposedly to make sure that there would be no more war in Europe. Unfortunately, cornered by two different authoritarianisms, the authoritarianism of Putin on the one hand and the expansionary warmongering forces within the US-led NATO alliance, Europe has been caught in a frenzy.